Welcome to the Hungarian Living Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Szabó-Vas. Our goal is to discover, celebrate, and share Hungarian heritage and encourage you to do it too. We'll touch on food, travel, history, music, and language, and share stories from our listeners. We're glad you're here. This is a podcast where we'll encourage you to dig deeper to learn about your Hungarian heritage in a variety of ways. We'll have thought-provoking conversations and share resources. So whether you know a little or a lot about being Hungarian, this is the place to be. Welcome to the Hungarian Living Podcast. I'm your host, Liz Szabó-Vas, and today I am visiting with author Julia Buckley. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you.
So before we chat about your books, let's talk a bit about your Hungarian heritage. Which side does your Hungarian heritage come from, your mom or your dad?
My father is Hungarian. Both of his parents were born in Hungary, or what was Hungary at the time. My grandfather was from Bodva Vendegi, which I think was like a river town. They're both kind of peasant stock. And that is now, I think, Serbia. And my grandmother was born in Doroslovo, which I think is now Slovakia.
Okay.
So they both came to the U.S. in the 1920s, I believe. And they met each other in an American citizenship class.
Oh, fun. Okay. So then your dad was a product of that marriage.
Right.
Okay. Okay. And then where did he grow up? And then did you end up growing up in that same area or was it different?
My dad grew up in two places. He grew up in Chicago because my grandfather worked on the railroad. But sometimes they lived in Michigan in a little town called Coloma because my grandmother's father had come to America first and had worked on the railroad. And in the process of his work, he broke his back and got a little subsidy or a little money.
Disability. Mm-hmm.
Disability from the government, mm-hmm. or from the railroad, I mean. And so he bought some property in Michigan. So when my grandmother first came out alone at 17, she was basically his housekeeper and she cooked for him and did all these things. So after she married, she would spend some of the time out in Michigan with her father while my grandfather worked in the city. And then he would come out to Michigan on the weekends. And then when their children got older, they mostly lived in Chicago. They had a house on Avalon and, they lived right across the street from a parish called Our Lady of Hungary.
Oh, wow. Okay. So then you grew up in that area as well then?
Well, they were right in the city in the south part of Chicago. I grew up in the south suburbs, probably about an hour south of Chicago. And, but we would visit my grandparents. It only took about half an hour, 45 minutes to get to where they lived. And we visited them every Sunday.
Oh, fun. Okay. So was there a strong Hungarian influence where you lived or did most of that come from within your family?
Oh, it was within my family. I don't think we always used to poke fun at my dad because wherever we went, he would say, "Do a lot of Hungarians live here?" And people would always say, "No." And we were like, "Good try, Dad." But in fact, once our family went to Montreal on a vacation and my dad, we were in a horse-drawn carriage, you know, that some, it was some tourist attraction. And the guy, I think his name was Claude or Pierre or something like that. And he was driving us and my dad was up in front with him. And he said, "Are there a lot of Hungarians in Montreal?" And the man said, "No," like he was offended, but... no, it was definitely within my family, but that was a big Hungarian influence.
Okay. And so do you recall anything specific from your childhood that you know happened because of Hungarian heritage or special traditions or foods or things like that?
Well, one of the first things I remember is that I grew up being called Juliska because mm-hmm. My name's Julia. Actually, my grandmother's name was Julia as well. I was named for her. And so, you know, from the time I was tiny, that was all she called me was Juliska. And so that, you know, I think that formed part of my identity.
Sure.
It was both Julia and Juliska. And also the fact that whenever we went to visit them, absolutely the food was paramount. My grandmother was a great cook. In fact, she had a job cooking for the priests and nuns in the parish across the street, Our Lady of Hungary. And okay. She was just terrific. I have memories of my sister and I. We were the youngest two of the children in my family. So we would have overnights at my grandma's house when we were little. And we would wake up, you know, probably pretty early in the morning, the way kids do. And she would already be down there making noodles, you know, making those tiny noodles for chicken soup. And the whole kitchen, you probably know, you can't even describe the aroma, but I still remember it. And the whole kitchen just smelled delicious, you know, like chicken soup. And then by lunchtime, we had chicken soup with noodles. And, you know, that was just her all the time. And some of the standards were, of course, you know, the stuffed peppers, the stuffed cabbage, the cochonya. She made cochonya.
Good stuff.
Well, when I was little, I could wolf it down, you know, just helping after helping. Now I don't know that I would like to eat it.
But I feel exactly the same. I loved it as a child. And now I'm like, oh, I don't know. But I still can. I can do it.
Yeah. Something about the jelly part, you know, is just kind of grosses me out now. But yeah, so she always had pans of that. And she made, of course, chicken paprikash was a standard and a favorite. With the I try to make dumplings the way she did, but her dumplings were just so, you know, fluffy and big. And really, I just always remember her in the kitchen. You know, my grandpa would be in the living room watching sports, and she would be in the kitchen just ruling the roost and making everything. And my dad, of course, grew up with that food too. So he still makes Hungarian food for himself. And like, if we have a family party, he'll bring a big pot of chicken paprikash or sake goulash, which was another favorite.
Yes.
And, you know, we all go after that because that's delicious.
You bet.
So yeah, there was lots of Hungarian food and lots of Hungarian speaking, but only among my dad, his mother, and his father, because they were the ones who spoke Hungarian. Even my father's younger siblings didn't speak Hungarian as well as he did. And I think it's because when my father went to school, he didn't speak English. They had spoken only Hungarian in the house. And then he was cast into school. Luckily, he went to Our Lady of Hungary Parish School. So there were other little Hungarian kids in there, you know, who also didn't speak English. And then there were just other immigrant kids, you know, from other families, or I mean, other ethnicities who also couldn't speak English. So they were all kind of thrown together. But so he still remembers his Hungarian from that and from talking with his parents. But he doesn't feel that he has a really sophisticated Hungarian vocabulary because his parents were not educated. I mean, they both were thrown into the work world when they were, you know, in grade school. So, but it was funny for us, you know, we would listen to all this rapid fire Hungarian going back and forth. And my brother would always joke that they would just put be on the end of words that they couldn't translate into Hungarian.
Right. Kind of a Hunglish kind of thing.
Right.
That's pretty accurate, I would say, in a lot of families, for sure. Yeah. For sure. So let's talk a little bit about your writing, you know, because we're here mainly to talk about these books, although I love hearing about the history of your family just because it's had such a huge influence on the things we do. So how many books just in general have you written so far?
Well, I've written a lot of books. They come in three categories.
Okay.
The books that aren't published, that are just, you know, manuscripts lying in the ether in my computer, books I published with someone other than Berkeley, and then the books I published with Penguin, Berkeley Prime Crime. So with Penguin, I have three series, and so they add up to 11 books. I have, which we can talk about. But the third Hungarian book is coming out in May, and it's called Death on the Night of Lost Lizards, which is a weird title, but hopefully it'll be attention getting. And then I have two other series with them. I published a book way back in 2006, which was, I think, my first published mystery. And that one was with a different publisher called Midnight Ink. So I have a few titles that went through them. And then I have some stuff I published on my own on, you know, online where you can get it on Kindle or something like that. So okay. I have quite a few books, somewhere probably between 20 and 30 published books.
Wow. Okay. All right. And let's zero in on the two books that we carry, partly because they're light and fun, but mainly because they're Hungarian or have a Hungarian connection. So it's Death in a Budapest Butterfly and Death of a Wandering Wolf. And I typically pick heavier topics to read. I don't know why, but you know, this last year, it was nice to have something that was easy and enjoyable, a little bit of mystery thrown in. So it was just a fun read where it didn't stress me out. So they were the perfect books to read during the intensity of this last year. So first of all, thank you for writing them.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for reading.
So what gave you the ideas for the main characters or the storylines for these books?
They had kind of a long life trajectory because initially I had, right when my oldest son was going to start college, and I thought, ooh, I could really use some extra money to help pay for college. And I had been trying to get more books published, but it's, you know, it's a difficult process and you have to try and find an agent and all of these things. So I thought, you know, I had noticed that culinary mysteries, which is its own genre, were really popular and they seemed to sell well. And I thought, well, gosh, I have culinary experience that's very distinctive. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a Hungarian family and I had this grandmother who made all this amazing food. So I decided to try to do that one summer, to just power through and write one of these culinary mysteries. But the books that I write for Berkeley are also in the genre called cozy mysteries. And those are mysteries that are sort of descended from the Agatha Christie tradition in that the crime is not really the central focus. The puzzle is the central focus. So the crime happens off stage, essentially. And then it's really more about like character relationships and solving a puzzle. And they can be fun and they can even be funny. But you have that mystery structure to hold the whole story together. So I like that structure and I feel like I can write humor. So I said, okay, I have all the ingredients. I just need to write this book. So one summer, I wrote a book that is not published. It was called Death in a Hungarian Kitchen. But I wove in all my elements. You know, the crime was actually related to the Hungarian Revolution. So they had to trace back, you know, to something that happened in that era. But it was set in the 1980s in a Chicago restaurant that's made only Hungarian food. And the chef was this woman, Katinka, who was terrific at making Hungarian food. So I wrote that. I was really proud of it. And I thought, you know, I had had books in the past where I thought, this isn't really ready to go out. But this one, I thought, you know what? I think this will sell. But the goal was to try to find an agent who could then sell it for me. So I sent it. I decided I would just send it to a multitude of agents and see if I could get one or two who were interested. And that ended up being how it happened. So my current agent is actually my third agent because sometimes you just end up not seeing eye to eye or whatever and you move on. Sure. So she wrote back to me when she read the manuscript and she said, I love the writing. I don't know if I can sell people on the whole Hungarian angle. And I thought, well, that's the whole thing. it's all about the Hungarian angle. And she said, so maybe why don't you write something else for me and I'll see if I can sell it. And, you know, initially I tried to hold off and go to other agents, but she was the one who had showed the most interest. So I tabled my Hungarian book and I wrote this other series for her that she sold. And then she sold a second series for me. So then when I was talking to her about, could I write something different? And she said, yes, what are you thinking of? And I said, I'd really like to go back to the whole Hungarian thing.
Sure.
So she said, we can try it, but, you know, it can't be that other one because I felt like that was too suspenseful. It was too scary and you need to be a little cozier. So that's why I came up with this one, which was I said, okay, I'll set this one in the present, and it will be, I have this fictional town called Riverwood. Obviously, we both know there are pockets of the U.S. where there are pretty big Hungarian populations.
Sure, yeah.
And so Riverwood is one of those places. There are lots of Hungarian people there. And so my chef is Hanna, who I borrowed her name from one of my coworkers, who also happens to be part Hungarian. And I said, you know, I really like your name. I'm going to use it in a book sometime. So Hanna works in a tea house. And that was my agent's idea. I didn't see a tea house as particularly Hungarian, although I know that in Budapest, they have some like trendy tea houses. But she said, I think that should be part of it because readers like tea for some reason, like that concept really sells. So I said, okay. So I just sort of superimposed all my stuff into this tea house setting. And I decided that, you know, initially I wasn't going to make a big deal of the fact that her grandmother seemed to have a little bit of psychic ability. She was just going to kind of tell, read tea leaves at the tea house, because that seemed like a fun thing to do. But then as I was writing the first book, I thought, now this could actually be kind of cool if she's, you know, if they all think she's reading tea leaves just as a gimmick, you know, to draw people to the tea house, but that she really actually does have some insight. Mm-hmm. And so that's what happened in book one. And then I've kind of built on that. But I thought, I know nothing about reading tea leaves, and, you know, it's not a thing I've ever been into. So I just changed it because I thought, okay, well, if this, you know, Hungarian woman, Hanna's grandmother, does have some kind of instinctive insights about people, then she doesn't have to follow traditional tea leaf reading structures. She can just make up her own. And everything is related to Hungary or Hungarian myth or folklore or whatever.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. And then I just had fun kind of exploring Hungarian folklore. Which is fascinating, by the way.
Yes, yes, it is.
So,
well, it works pretty well, too, in the book. So I thought that was pretty entertaining. So what can we expect? Because you said the third title is coming out in May. So what can we expect from that book?
Well, each of the first two books ends up being, the mystery is rooted around some sort of piece of Hungarian art. In fact, in both cases, it's a piece of Hungarian porcelain, because Hungary has all these, you know, wonderful porcelain makers. And so in book one, the Budapest butterfly is actually a teacup that was made by Anna Weatherly, who's still a porcelain artist. And I just admired some of her work. So I had it be, you know, a collector's cup of hers. Mm-hmm. And then in book two, it's this porcelain wolf. And that's what the wandering wolf applies to two people or to two ideas. The porcelain wolf that Hanna buys at a garage sale, and the man who is murdered has a reputation for having a wandering eye and, you know, being a womanizer. Mm-hmm. So that mystery is about that. And the third one, it's set at Christmas time. And so, of course, I got to incorporate lots of wonderful Hungarian traditions, and they're making those terrific Hungarian Christmas cookies.
Yep. Always.
Mézes kolács.
Mm-hmm. Mézes kolács.
Yeah. And, you know, so there's lots of fun at the tea house, lots of decorative things, but the crime itself is about a man, a professor at the local university, who is killed. And it ends up relating to something that Hanna sees, and she herself has inherited some insight, as we learned in the first two books. So it helps her to help her boyfriend, who happens to be the police detective. And the Lost Lizards are based on a Zsolnay, a set of a tea set made by Zsolnay, which has the handle is made out of snakes, and the two lizard heads are the twin lizards, I initially called it On the Night of Twin Lizards, and then the editor said make it alliterative, so we changed it to Lost Lizards.
Okay.
So this was a tea set Hanna had seen long ago, and she went back to buy it and someone had gotten it. And so it was just sort of like a memory of a thing. You know, she always wants these beautiful things. So if she loses something, she always kind of remembers it. Well, then it's her birthday in December and her uncle Zoltan sends her the tea set, which he found somewhere. So she says, oh, I've reclaimed my lost lizards. Well, the lizards, the two lizards on the teacup end up representing a duality for her. You know, she tends to be thinking in twos all through the novel, and that helps her solve the mystery by the end.
Oh, okay. Kind of a well, so. Very cool. Okay. Well, good. I'm looking forward to that because it'll... Now, will there be a fourth, or is it just you do typically things in threes?
Well, the publisher signs you to a series of three, and then okay. depending upon your readership, your sales, they might extend that. So okay. for one of my series, which is called the Writer's Apprentice series, they did extend the series to five. For this one, I don't get the sense they'll be extending it because mm-hmm. the sales are just medium, mm-hmm. but one can always hope.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
We can cross our fingers.
You bet. So when did you know that you were going to be a writer? When, you know, was this always a life thing where you thought about writing and loved writing? Or was it, I know you said that it was because of you were looking for ways to make money for school, for college, mm-hmm. but I'm sure that wasn't, you had to have something before then.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah, actually, it goes back to when I was pretty little. You know, my family, you know that before the internet, people found entertainment in other
Absolutely.
Places.
Absolutely, yes.
And we were a big book family. And so basically, like, our big entertainment was, at least when I was a kid, was we would walk over to the library and just get like a huge pile of books mm-hmm. to read that week or for over the next 2 weeks. And I, you know, it was like rubies to me to get a bag of library books. So
you bet.
You know, so I fell in love with reading, but I also, it was so glamorous to me when I would see, because my library had a bunch of old hardbacks. So I loved reading books by those 20th century bestsellers, people like Mary Stuart and Phyllis A. Whitney and Victoria Holt. And, you know, they were kind of romantic suspense. They weren't just mystery. Mm-hmm. But I loved their books, and I would like devour every part of a book. So I would look at the fly leaf where the author biography was, and I would study the photo, and I would read, you know, all the information, and I would read their dedication and everything. It was like the way now that young people probably like idolize a movie star or somebody sure. Somebody on TikTok or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, for me, the heroes were writers. And, you know, I couldn't think of any more glamorous life back then than to be the writer who's on the cover or the back cover of the book. So that was a part of it for me. And also, I just loved writing. Even when I was a little kid, you know, first learning to write, I would try to write these little poems. And my mom would, you know, go to the dime store or something and get me a little notebook. And then mm-hmm. she would write. My mother was from Germany, and she had this perfect German script that she learned in school, right? It almost looked like calligraphy.
Oh, wow.
And she, yeah, and that was just her handwriting. So she would read my poems, you know, that I misspelled and tried to write out. And then she would write them out in her script and say, you know, this poem by Julia. And
I
still have this tiny notebook with my poems that she wrote out for me. So she was kind of like my early publisher because she
yes.
was, she would.
And editor.
Yeah. And she would sort through my work. That's so funny because when I was in high school and I had to type research papers, and my mom was a far better typist than I was. And so I'd say, Mom, could you type my research paper? Which seems like such a big request now. But, you know, back then it was whoever could type.
Yes.
And so she would type them for me, but she would change wording along the way. And I would say, Mom, that is not what I wrote. And she said, yeah, but I don't think you want this word. You know, and like she would just change it, which got me so upset. But I think she and I are very similar that way. Actually, now, you know, I've recently had some trouble with vision. And so I had to rely on my husband and son to occasionally type things for me.
Sure.
history repeats itself.
Of course it does.
Or send emails for me. And they're editing me, you know, where I'm dictating to my husband and I'll say, okay, tell this person this. And he says, is that the word you want? You know, or are you sure that's what you want to say? And he second guesses me. And I think, oh, I need to get back on my keyboard.
So. Yeah, you've lost some control here.
You know, yes.
When yeah, they're editing your work.
I need to reclaim my agency.
So. Yes. Okay. Well, this has been a delightful conversation. And I really appreciate you taking the time to visit with me today. It's sure. It's been very fun to just kind of walk through some of your life and the stories, and then even to hear, you know, about your early writing and your mom's editing. I mean, that's just super fun. And it'll be fun to read the third book in the series with just even a little more insight into you and just the history that goes into, you know, I think, especially with the books being having a Hungarian connection, there's mm-hmm. a big part of you that goes into that.
It's true. Yeah. So. And if people are interested and they want to read it, they should start with number one, Death in yes. the Budapest Butterfly, because the story, of course, progresses from there.
Right. And we will make sure that we have the information for that in the show notes, links to buying it. And then if people want to get in contact with you, they can go to your website, which is juliabuckley.com, but mm-hmm. we'll make sure that is also in the show notes so that people can, because they from there, they can actually send an email to you and that kind of thing, or communicate with you, right?
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Perfect. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. And I appreciate talking to a fellow Hungarian American. And I love your catalog, by the way, and I have ordered many items from there over the years. So,
well, wonderful, wonderful. Well, I appreciate your support. You know how it is when you're everybody's a small family operation, that it's right. it's fun to make connections. So,
thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hungarian Living Podcast. We hope you have enjoyed this conversation with Julia Buckley, author of Death in a Budapest Butterfly and Death of a Wandering Wolf. And we will include links in the show notes to the books that we have mentioned in this episode. And have a great week. Hungarian Living is a division of Magyar Marketing, the Hungarian store, where you can find meaningful gifts with Hungarian style. Check us out at magyarmarketing.com. And special thanks to Stephen Cicek and the Animal Cannibals for the show music. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode of Hungarian Living, please subscribe and share this podcast with your favorite Hungarian. Check out our show notes for links to resources mentioned in this episode. If you have a question or comment, email us at podcast@hungarianliving.com. We'll catch you next time.